Today on Doomed, we are done with the first night of the second Democratic debates of the 2020 primary season. Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Pete Buttigieg, Beto O'Rourke, Amy Klobuchar, John Delaney, who spoke for amazingly longer than anyone would have ever expected, Marianne Williamson, Tim Ryan, Steve Bullock. Am I forgetting anyone? I feel like I am. There's too many people on stage still, but we're bringing you post-debate coverage live right now on Doomed with Matt Binder. And joining me now, good friends of the show, they are collectively known as the Bad Praxis Podcast, but you all may know them as Kennedy, Chi, and Bob, because they are, well, friends of the show, always watching the live stream of the program. Kennedy is a mod in the live stream YouTube channel.
Chi is a mod, too.
Oh,
that's true.
did I make you a mod and not realize?
Ops world.
Did I make you a mod and not even realize? Wow. I'll have to remove that immediately. No, just joking. Also, I guess I should add a full disclosure there that I'm bringing my mods on the show as guests now. So, guys, what did you think of the first night of the debates? Anyone.
We all started talking at the same time. I love that. But okay, so I was pleasantly surprised at how well I thought the only two progressives on the stage did. And also at how absolutely terribly everybody else did. I thought that was wonderful.
Right, like I feel like the left lane of this really performed well during all the flares and conflicts. Like, they didn't kind of verbally lose. I think a impartial person would give them a lot of points.
Right, there was
a contrast were pretty the contrasts were pretty stark between Bernie and Warren, and then you had everybody else like off to the side, and just like every individual answer that they gave, even on stuff that I don't really agree with Warren on, was like in an entirely different world than the other 27 people on stage.
Right. There was a clear tag team strategy, whether it was purposeful or not. I guess we won't know for now. But there was some real unity between Bernie and Warren. And, you know, nowhere was it more pronounced, in my opinion, than when the centrists, the moderates on the stage, went after Medicare for All. This was the opening, the opening of the debate. And the two of them basically held their own and backed each other up in defending Medicare for All. And it was nice to see, because I know we don't quite know where Elizabeth Warren is on Medicare for All. She says she supports it, but does sort of flip-flop when asked if she'll support other stuff. And she doesn't lay out the policy on her website, where she heralds very detailed plans. Interestingly enough,
plan person.
Right. Interestingly enough, the major issue, the issue that every poll says that is the Democrats, the Democratic base's first and foremost issue, healthcare. She doesn't have that on her website, apparently. No plan there. But it was good to see her defend Bernie's plan there. Excuse me, I'm choking for some reason.
No, that's okay. Like, I'm the person that ruins our podcast by sniffing, so.
Yeah.
Well, and like, go, Kennedy, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. I didn't even know what I was gonna say.
So, like, I thought in the very first debate of this campaign, Warren decided to make the turn to support the more Bernie Medicare for All, And she said, yeah, actually, I am against private insurance. And I don't know if she did that because, you know, she kind of saw that all the centrists were going to be like aligned against her anyway. But she decided to make that turn and kind of double down on it tonight, which is nice to see, because the best thing for the left is to have two candidates that are, you know, kind of like full-throated support for an actual Medicare for all, instead of the zombie right. versions that everyone else talks about.
Right, right. And
it's really good when Bernie's not just out in the woods alone and there's someone that he's paired with making the same arguments or similar ones.
Right. And I felt like it gave him like a level of confidence to not be like the only person that like has like a tiny speck of empathy on the stage. And he was just on fire, especially during like the segment where they were talking about Medicare for all. I just, you know, I really hope that they keep that dynamic up. And I hope that they are actively planning on working together as they move forward with their campaigns.
Right. Yeah, Bernie had a particularly Bernie had a particularly strong outing during that Medicare for All portion. I mean, obviously, it's amazing that no one, you know, when you're watching the analysts talk on the on the TV, no one brings up that they're literally centering the debate on something Bernie Sanders has like put forth as the standard bearer. The conversation is completely around that. I'm going to get something to drink. You guys continue. You guys continue. Sure.
So the like the first thing that I wanted, like what I want to shout out, like when Tim Ryan tried to tell Bernie that he didn't know what would be included in his own plan, and Bernie was like, "I fucking wrote the bill."
Yeah.
I thought that was one of
my favorite parts of the debate.
Yeah. Me too, because he was so nice during the first debate. Like, he was so quiet. He kind of, like, stuck to the background. And I was worried that was going to be a strategy, like, throughout the whole campaign, and that he was just going to, like, try to get his message out, like, through his, like, social media, like, networking. But I'm really glad that he just sort of went for the throat tonight. Like, it was great.
And I want to say that he had some confidence with being on the stage with Warren and knowing that he wasn't the only, like, empathetic, normal human being out there.
Right.
And it gives, like, not being alone gives you a little bit more room to go on the offensive a little bit. Mm-hmm.
And also, since we were mentioning how the debate is, a lot of the debate they're having is centered around plans Bernie or the left wing have put forward, it's been great to see the centrist or center-right people just going out and defending the indefensible, like when they really don't have to. Like, I forget which person in particular said this, but he was talking about how people would lose their insurance and lose their Medicare Advantage. Like, people love their Medicare Advantage. Are you kidding me? Like, who has that thought?
Yeah, and John Delaney defended the TPP. He said, I'm the only person on this stage that hasn't attached the TPP. And does he not know that that's a really bad thing? For, like, not even just, like, Democratic voters, but, like, literally everybody in the country, especially the states that he's claiming that he's going to be able to win, because he's like, I'm a moderate. I'm
yeah, that's one of the ways Trump differentiated himself in, like, the very states they're talking about wooing. So, I mean...
No, that it was a very big issue in 2016. Like, people, like, when Trump first started talking about TPP, like, CNN or whatever was like, oh, no one cares about that. No one knows what that is. And it, like, actually swung the election, I think. It was one of the things that was very, like, very big in the Midwest. Very big in these states where people are just losing their jobs left and right. People definitely know what TPP is. And they
hate here it. In Ohio, like, that's what people are looking for, is trade policy. That's what people care about. That is, like, for, I would say, for the majority of one issue voters in Ohio, that is the issue.
one thing that you brought up, now that I'm not choking on myself, that I want to get back to, was there was another what the fuck moment for me with John Delaney. And it was when they were arguing about Medicare for All, and he thinks it's a good point as they're discussing how the insurance industry is basically killing people for profit. He decides it'd be a good time to bring up how he's the only person who's ever worked in the healthcare business.
And Bernie roasted him on that.
And Bernie, incredibly right. And Bernie screams out,
yeah,
healthcare is not a business. And it was great. But I mean, the guy just can't read the room.
It's like, you don't know how this like extractive rent seeking industry works.
Well, this is
nice one.
To show like this centrist tendency to show like, I'm going to prove that I'm the adult in the room. I'm going to prove that like, I know how the world works. I'm the weary, wizened, small business tyrant.
Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder what the thinking is, really, to let John Delaney speak for as long as he did. Because, listen, I get it. This is CNN. This is cable news, period. They want to portray that the moderate centrist position is the sensible one, and that everyone else is either too far left or too far right or whatever it may be. And that's why they give someone, you know, a voice like Pete Buttigieg or an Amy Klobuchar the time. But John Delaney spoke way more than I would have ever expected him to for a guy that's polling, non-existently polling. And I almost wonder if they just were like, well, if this guy's going to step up and advocate for this position, then we'll give him all the time in the world. Because they didn't have a problem cutting off certain people where they were like, whoa, why is this guy speaking for more than a minute? Like, they were, you could tell when they were going to give someone some time to really go. And then you can tell, like, when Hickenlooper, who I swear to God, there were a few times, there was more than one time tonight where they called on him and it literally looked like that he just woke up from a nap. Like, they woke him up.
Like, he's a husk.
Like, yeah. Like, John Delaney is terrible for his positions. But at least he was able to argue for them. Not well, because his positions are wrong, but he was able to make the case for what he believed. I swear to you, every time they called on Hickenlooper, it was literally like when you were in school and you got called on and weren't paying attention and you were just like, oh, yeah, that's something that I wholly have an opinion on. And my opinion is that we shouldn't do that, maybe, or maybe we, like, he really.
Yeah, it's like when you're writing the essay and you're like, this is a very important issue of which the ramifications, yeah, just a bunch of like fluff.
Like,
but as far as that, like, them using someone like Delaney to be the voice for the centrist, center right, whatever of the party, fine. But the guy is like a zero percenter. He pulls like well within the margin of error. So they could at least pull from one of the, you know, people who are a little higher in the polls. You know, I don't think just because you're in the House of Representatives, like,
no,
you get a place.
He's not. John Delaney is. Right. He's. He is.
Yeah, John Delaney.
He is nothing now. Like, people make fun of Marianne Williamson for just being a spiritual speaker and author or whatever. And I get it that Delaney was formerly a congressman. But as to what they are doing now, I would say Marianne Williamson probably does more than Delaney now, because Marianne Williamson is probably on some sort of bestseller list somewhere.
Right. I almost, like,
so,
this is like
real.
We always do that. This is like conspiracy, like, nonsense. But part of me wonders if they didn't just figure, like, he's not going anywhere, so maybe he'll, you know, I think that if there is like a plan to attack the left wing of the party, I think that they would let somebody like Delaney off the leash a little bit when they know he's like not going anywhere. And again, that's conspiracy theory. Like, that's like X-Files music playing in the background. But I can't think of any other reason why they would let him command the stage like that. He didn't say anything except for like, everything you like is bad. Vote for me. I don't get it.
I'm gonna pull. Hold on. I have to interrupt my for a second. I think I pulled. I'm gonna pull an Andrew Yang, but I think I did it on myself. I've been muting myself on the YouTube live stream end every time I've been choking over here. So I'm not sure. I think I've been good for the whole time, except for the part where I just said that John Delaney is not currently a congressman. If you're hearing this again, I'm sorry, but I can't remember if I had myself on mute or not. I know you guys on Skype heard me, but for the YouTube stream, I'm not sure. So let me repeat. John Delaney is not currently a congressman. He is probably from Marianne Williamson as an author is probably more relevant than him because at least she's on a bestseller list somewhere. Now that I've said that, I'm sorry. And I won't say she's cool. I am very disappointed. I have her as my third tonight because her reparations.
She's bad tonight. Like the Medicare for all.
That is where she completely loses me. The reparations thing was fantastic. And when they went to Bernie after, I was sort of like, oh no, because she undoubtedly has the stronger position. But at the same time, though, I will point out that Carl Bajir over on Twitter pointed out that if you look at her actual reparations proposal, it says she would put that money towards educational programs and things like that. There is in nowhere does she say what it seemed to be what she was advocating on stage, where she would cut a check for individual African Americans in this country. And that's what the argument, I believe, is about when it comes to talking about reparations, which, again, I'd like to add, you can hear what Julian Castro has to say, Cory Booker has to say, whoever has been, quote-unquote, good on the reparations issue when you're comparing them, when the media likes to compare them to, like, Bernie Sanders or something. But when it comes down to it, not a single one of them have said they will cut a check to individuals in this country for reparations. No one. They just pad their words differently, and they basically all end up saying the same exact thing. Yes, even Bernie Sanders. They're all in the same position when it comes to reparations. Some of them are just better at fooling the media with the words they use. It's all semantics.
And it makes it easier to attack the, like, ostensibly most left wing of the party when they say openly what every other candidate talking about reparations is saying. They just don't dress it up in the same way. So I think that there's a lot of posturing to make yourself seem more left for doing the same exact thing.
So,
well, and something else that was kind of bad about Marianne's answer about reparations that Carl pointed out is that in her answer, she said that she did the math and that America owes trillions to the African American community, but that we can't do that. And she's like, so we'll do a little bit, which is, you know, if you're going to kind of do the flex about how you did the math and how, you know, all this money is owed and then say, oh, well, but we can't do that. You just invalidated your whole answer. And I appreciate Bernie being honest about it, even though he gets dunked on by the media, you know, it's the same plan everyone else has. It's the same plan Harris has. It's the same plan Booker has. The framing of it is pretty disappointing in the media.
Yeah. And it's funny because every single time Bernie does have like a quote unquote like radical proposal, they just like, you know, pundits and they just constantly try to shit on him for it. And then the second that he is like, you know, opposed, like supposedly not as left wing as other members of the party, the media is like, ah ha ha, gotcha.
Right.
And it's so, you know, it's so disingenuous.
Guys, I don't know if you've seen this tweet. It's just come to my attention. But this is not breaking news, but very, very breaking news to me in terms of the opinion. Jennifer Rubin of The Washington Post.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no.
During the debate, tweeted out, Delaney beating Bernie like a drum on Medicare
yeah.
for all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just saying.
I'd love to take advice from a Republican, from a lifelong Republican. That's the person that I want to give advice to me.
Listen,
progressive Democrat.
I don't know. I don't care what you are. If, you know, I haven't seen anyone. Even the most pretend as hell, I'm a centrist down the middle journalist who doesn't take any sides and never advocates for any positions, even though I let my writing specifically advocate for positions when I pretend I'm doing down the middle, non-opinionated work. Even those journalists, I have not seen say anything positive about Delaney's performance tonight. So it is stunning to see.
But he attacked Medicare for all. That's the positive part of it to them. It's not that his answers were good or coherent or sensible. It's just that he was their, like, attack dog.
Right.
And he yelled at Bernie, and he said, no, actually, like, better things aren't possible. Shut up, old man. And so that's a win to them.
Right.
I just don't understand the headspace of anybody that watches John Delaney on the debate stage and says, that is my candidate. He's really...
Well, there's apparently no one that does.
Yeah, I mean, except for people yes. like...
Literally no one.
Okay, they all, like, publish in newspapers.
Yeah.
So...
But on the disingenuous attacks, or, like, saying, like, you're not left enough, you... I remember a moment where I think it was Bullock was trying to frame what Bernie and the people who support Medicare for All are doing is they're supporting basically repeal and replace the same way they do on the right. That was just incredible
to
kind of shoehorn that into it.
He directly compared Bernie to Trump.
Right. He was like, there are some people on, you know, the left and the right that just want to repeal Obamacare, you know.
Same thing.
Well, yeah. You know what? The most disgusting instance of that tonight came from a moderator when Jake Tapper said, Bernie, both you and Trump don't think America should be the police of the world anymore.
Oh, my God.
Can you explain to me how your foreign policy differs from Donald Trump's?
It's like, first of all, the guy doesn't have a foreign policy. It's like all id or like whatever his advisors and handlers are cooking up. But
right.
like the reason Trump to begin with is seen as a softer guy on foreign policy, even though he's not, is because that was him trying to appeal more. Well, I mean, at least this is how I imagine it, him trying to appeal more to actually more moderate people, like who don't like war, who aren't crazy about war.
Right.
That doesn't mean like he's some like that's like some like well thought out principled position he has, or that it's somehow inherently right wing. That's just he's trying to appeal to people.
But. He modeled his entire, like, 2016, not his campaign, but the way that he, like, his foreign policy rhetoric, he modeled it after Bernie Sanders. His anti-war, even his, like, anti-trade stuff. It was so obviously, like, a papier-mâché version of Bernie Sanders' politics. And I don't understand...
I wouldn't even say it was copying Bernie in that way, because obviously Trump's not going to copy Bernie and like say, oh, I'm going to do it. What I think really went on is that someone made the calculated decision that Hillary Clinton was weaker than any Democratic candidate has been in years in the Rust Belt. And they saw that Bernie Sanders had the rhetoric that connected with the Rust Belt states. What was going on there with trade. And they said, I'm not saying Trump did this. I'm saying his people did this, because Trump is not bright enough to do this. And they said, listen, hammer on this stuff. Hillary's weak on it. The Midwest, specifically Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, Pennsylvania, they will eat this stuff up coming from you. And you have a good chance of winning by going through the Rust Belt. And I think that's what ended up happening, really. And it worked. It worked because I don't see any other way around that. Like, that's what happened there. Like, you just have to look at where Democrats usually win and where they lost in 2016. And that's the strategy that ended up working for Trump.
Right. And so then Tepper's criticism or question of him amounts to trying to be stronger. I'm not really being articulate, but like Bernie's position there is the correct one. And he's asking him, why is he basically appealing, I guess. I kind of lost the thread on that.
No, it's no, but no. But,
well, and so
listen, what I think you're saying, buddy, if like, I'm going to probably. No, go ahead.
You couldn't Bob explain it to me.
So, like, I guess what I saw from Jake Tapper on that was, and you see it, I guess I've seen it from the media since 2016, where they say, like, well, Bernie's a populist and Trump's a populist.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're exactly the same. Right. Or, like, you know, Bernie and Trump both have, like, anti, like, TPP rhetoric. So they're exactly the same. It's just a really weak attempt to paint like outsiders to the normal American political process as being exactly the same, no matter where they fall on the political spectrum. And it's just, it's a very like, I don't know, self-serving or self-protecting instinct on the part of someone like Jake Tapper.
Right. And I just want to bring up, while we're talking about Jake Tapper, I just want to bring up the fantastic moment where Bernie Sanders called him out for repeating Republican talking points about Medicare for All, and then saying, adding in, they tried to cut him off, but he got it in there, how there will be ads from the healthcare industry on this very network right after the debates.
Yeah, did you see any of those ads?
And Warren also brought up later that the people on stage were bringing up Republican talking points. So it was very satisfying to see both of them like kind of be hand in hand on that and call people out for it.
The one thing I'm sort of disappointed in, and it's almost shocking to me that, like, you know, CNN's looking for these moments here, and this would have been a really good moment because it would have given people information that they need. How do you have Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren side by side and not ask them and make them answer? So you both are the only candidates on this stage to put out a plan that forgives student debt. Explain to the people, what is the difference between each of your plans?
Right.
I don't get how you don't do that. I mean, I think. I mean, one reason not to do it, I think, is if you don't want Bernie Sanders to come out as the better looking person on that exchange. But I also don't think CNN is in the bag for Elizabeth Warren, so I don't think they would care to make her look that well either. I will say, though, that there is this bizarre, and I noticed this watching the analysts afterwards, the Democratic analysts that are hired as contributors to talk on CNN, MSNBC, I don't think it's coordinated, but they sure do have a real love for Elizabeth Warren that I don't see for any other candidate. And listen, if they're going to like someone, I'd rather be Elizabeth Warren than anybody else but Bernie Sanders, obviously. But it is really bizarre to watch this falling over for someone who advocates for literally everything Bernie Sanders advocates for. But, I mean, it's like, I get that it's not the same person, and very clearly all four of us can argue the very serious important differences between Bernie and Elizabeth. But those people who are saying they prefer Elizabeth, they could not differentiate between the two of them, I can guarantee you. So it's amazing to me to watch those same people do this. It's something that I know what's going on here, that she's the more palatable one to certain people because they think she's amendable in certain areas. And maybe she is, maybe she isn't. I don't know. But it is, you know, it's the thing that really bothers me is the obsession over her plans. And again, this is about this debate, and she was great at the debate, and none of this really came up, but we're on this tangent, so let me just bring it up. The plans are a campaign marketing strategy. That's all it is. You know, if I'm going to plug it to something in the debate, it's when, like, Amy Klobuchar and John Delaney and Tim Ryan and all those guys constantly bring up that, no, we work together. We don't fight for ideological things on the far left. We do the pragmatic thing because we work together with everyone to get things done. And it's obviously Elizabeth Warren's not that, but the plans are sort of that to me. Just something out there that makes people think they get things done. But what is getting things done? It doesn't mean anything. Who the fuck cares about getting things done? I would rather us sit in a standstill doing not a single thing if the getting things done means working with Republicans to cut Social Security, working with Republicans to put kids in a cage at the border, working with Republicans to only fund a little bit of the wall. I don't give two damns about getting things done. I want to get the right things done. And if the right things can't be done, then you know what? Let's not do anything. And then we could point the finger at the Republicans, at the centrists and the moderates who are stopping us moving forward and passing things that will help real people. And we can say, look, nothing's happening because of these people. And I refuse to just get things done for the hell of it because those things are going to hurt you. And I think the American people will respond to that. And I think they would respond to that very well. Much more than, I mean, we see how they responded to Nancy Pelosi giving in to the Republican plan to fund the immigration, the border security. It's clear as day where the Democratic base stands on this stuff. They're waking up to the fact that for years, for generations, for as long as they can remember, Democrats have tried to work with Republicans. And in the end, not even 9 out of 10 times, every single time, it's bit them in the ass.
Right.
So, Matt, do you remember Bullock's opening statement? So, Bullock took the stage and he said, you know, there's so many people out here that's going to tell you, like, so many things that you know, impossible dreams, like Medicare for all. And then as soon as he said that, he immediately launched into how he has a history of getting things done in Montana, no disrespect to Montana, but like a serious issue to voters when he got elected was like doing something about
the wolves.
Right.
He fucked nothing to anyone else in America.
Listen, that's a great point. It's a great point. And also the idea that, and this is no disrespect to anyone in Montana, I actually think Montana is a very beautiful state. And I do think it's great to see that they are one of those states that are a red state but vote for Democratic politicians. But it is a joke to me that this guy is out there saying, I can possibly deliver you a state that will bring 3 electoral votes. Like, who cares? Who
At least fucking Beto is trying to get Texas.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. And it's, if you also want to make that claim, I mean, Vermont, I know it's a blue state when it comes to presidential elections, but for 2 terms now, they've voted for a Republican governor. Don't know why. I'm assuming for a Republican in Vermont, he's probably fairly liberal, maybe, I assume, from what I've read about him, the little bit I've read about him. But I mean, there you go there too. Like, they're just, I mean, New York, liberal New York, before Cuomo, and let's talk about Cuomo as turning the state blue very, very liberally there. And I don't mean liberally as ideological. I mean,
very purpley.
Right. We had George Pataki. I mean, it's just a weird thing that happens in the state where for some reason or another, local politics, people who come out and vote for local in local races, and by local, I mean statewide too, they think, hey, maybe a Republican could do good in this scenario with the Senate that's Democratic. It's the dumbest thing in the world. It always leads to complete stalling and not, you know, talk about wanting to get things done. But
like, I know people that literally I know people that literally vote every cycle for the opposite party because they think that's how America achieves balance, or which is the most boomer brain dumb shit I can imagine, but here we are.
You know, but the thing is, there are more people in this country who think that way than think like the way everyone in the political Twitter bubble think. And I mean everyone. I'm talking about the DSA members.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the donuts who hate Bernie Sanders no matter what. I'm talking about the Ezra Kleins. I'm talking about the Nate Silvers. I'm talking about literally the majority of Americans think the way that you just thought. And that's why I think a lot of things we talk about sometimes needs to sort of be taken with that idea in mind. And I'm not saying it means nothing. Obviously, if the conversations that we have in this political bubble mean nothing, then there wouldn't be so much pressure from different groups and different moneyed interests to control that conversation. Obviously, it does matter immensely. But there still is a bubble going on there. And the people who think that way, I think, you know, they're coming away from tonight, and I don't see any scenario where they're just like, wow, Bernie Sanders was strong, Elizabeth Warren was strong. These other people tried to go at them with these ideas, which sound good to me, and Bernie and Elizabeth were able to explain very well, and they didn't have a good retort to their explanations. And and that's why I sort of think that hands down, the two of them are winners tonight. I think Bernie was the all-around better night in terms of just taking the entire debate, all 2.5 hours of it, and looking at it like that. But that Warren moment where she shot down John Delaney will definitely get a lot of press, too.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's something about Warren that appeals to, like, it's funny because, like, you mentioned, like, the obsession with her plans, and it's, like, the exact, like, it's, like, the liberal feminist inverse of, like, Yang Gang on Twitter being, like, oh, my God, just check out Andrew Yang's, like, policies page on his website. And it's, like, it doesn't matter what kind of, and, I mean, I like Warren more than I like Yang. I like her far more than I like Yang. But this obsession with, like, it's quantity over quality to these people. Like, the fact that there's, it's like when you're, like, when you have a test and you have to, like, decide whether you want to, like, answer something with kind of bullshit or leave it blank. Like, there's, as long as there's something filling that bubble, it doesn't really matter to them. It's, like, completely surface level.
Right. I mean, her plans are, listen, her plans are without a doubt. Out of all 10 people on the stage tonight, her plans are better. Obviously, she is one of them, so there's 9 other people on the stage. Her plans are better than the plans of 8 of them. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the debate stage tomorrow, her plans are better than all 10 of them. Right. But there's still some real problems with her plans. Like, there, people see she puts out this giant white paper, and they're like, without understanding them, without reading them, look at the detail, 100 pages. How can we go wrong? She knows what she's doing. But mm-hmm. but they're just not that good when you compare them to another person who's putting forward similar plans, which are better. I mean, one of her very good plans is like a 10-year plan to deal with the housing crisis. That's just not a good plan. I mean,
isn't it supposed?
Well, in like,
doesn't she say she's gonna like
year,
rent
she
for
like $50 a year?
Right.
Right. Decrease rent like 1%, like to add up to 10% over time. That's gonna save people like a relatively small amount of money, as opposed to just. It's like Bernie is like a Coke, and she's like Coke Zero. Like, she's not bad.
Elizabeth Warren is Coke. That might be a little dated. I say she was New Coke. That might be a little bit of a
okay. I only know what New Coke is because my mom still complains about it.
Yeah, and what bothers me about this, though, is that, you know, you bring this up online and the Elizabeth Warren stands get all angry, saying, oh, Bernie supporters attacking Elizabeth. But listen, if Elizabeth Warren's my number two, and mm-hmm. and she ends up pulling it off and wins the nomination, I want her, you all keep saying, like all her fans keep saying, all her supporters keep saying that she is just like Bernie. Well, then if she wins and you believe she's just like Bernie, then I want to push her to be just like Bernie, because she's not just like
right.
Bernie.
Right.
And, you know, if there's anyone, like, listen, like, there's a clear difference. The capitalism thing to me is a clear difference between the two of them. How they view this, the problem is a real issue to me. However, you know, if we're dealing with policy, she is certainly the one who is amendable to adopting Bernie Sanders' proposals as is, more so than anybody else. So, you know, no one's perfect, but, you know, so you got to take it for what it is. But,
right.
You know, it's also interesting to me that I really thought that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren were going to be fighting for the same supporters. And mm-hmm. it is clear as day to me that they're not. They're actually really not. Bernie Sanders supporters and Elizabeth Warren's base are not this. Sure, there's some overlap, but they're not as one and the same as I thought. Elizabeth Warren really does pick up the Hillary Clinton voter who was actually more progressive than Hillary, but didn't like Bernie Sanders because he was Bernie Sanders.
Right. And I'm not too shocked about that because you can see online, if you're on Twitter for 5 minutes, you can see that Bernie has like a really solid base of support. And in some ways, like in that way, at least, he is like Trump a bit, where like it doesn't matter how much people try to mold themselves to exactly what he's saying and doing. Like, he's just got this solid block of support on the left that will not budge. You know, there are a couple people that have left because they think Tulsi or Yang is more progressive for some fucking reason. But you know, other than that, like other than those people that just want to position themselves as, you know, and I think a lot of that is just wanting to seem more left than Bernie, which is nonsense. But his support isn't budging. And I think that Warren is fighting for the same voters that somebody like Kamala Harris is fighting for, and that's good for Bernie, because if they can have it out in their own, like, you know, liberal feminist lane, and there's nothing wrong with that, but if they can have it out in that lane and leave Bernie to the real fight, then
based on what Matt was saying, like, you all okay, yeah.
You're breaking up there. You got to go back and just repeat yourself. You completely broke up.
All right. I think it's good to kind of, like, these plans serve as a good way of having an outline of what you want to do policy-wise, and it kind of states your values. But, you know, ultimately, like, we know that the president, you know, they don't set the legislative agenda. So they have a lot of, you know, ability through rhetoric and like putting pressure and you know, public speaking to kind of set the agenda. But, you know, ultimately having a plan for everything isn't the most important thing in the world. And like a 100-page like white paper that I'm not going to read isn't really that important to me. So I guess to me, there's too much emphasis on like how incredibly detailed and wide-ranging Miss Warren's plans are, although they might be good, or we might have criticisms, or like be astonished at how like they fall flat on some things. Like, I think it's like a cap of $500 a month on prescription drugs, or I don't remember the details of that, but you know, little things like that. It's like, what's the good of this plan? And then the other thing I wanted to say was, you know, on like if she were the president, my hope is that the Bernie Sanders campaign for president doesn't end in a certain way, in that I think they need to maintain, you know, the things they're putting together and like the apparatus they're assembling, that should never go away, like ever. If he's the president, like they need to, you know, maintain it to push his agenda through. If he's not the president, he needs to use it to put pressure on whatever administration is in place to, you know, continue fighting. And you know, it's like in 2008 Obama shut down his Obama for America. I think that was a profound failure, and they went on to like drop the ball on a lot of things and like let you know, like when the unions were assembling in, I forget which, against Scott Walker, you know if say like you had Obama for America in that moment, you know, I think things could have went a lot different.
Oh, I know exactly. You know? I know exactly what you're saying. Like, absolutely.
Bernie stuff can't stop. Like,
right.
The burn app or like all whatever it is, it just never, don't end it.
Yeah. I don't think like it's one thing that's always striking to me is everyone on that stage always brings up how, you know, you need a grassroots movement to take on every single one of them. The person with, like, barely getting 65,000 individual donors up there saying, we need to build a movement. That's how we'll defeat Trump. I'm the guy to do it. Bernie
Sanders. With my 0.7%
right.
support.
Bernie Sanders, the only one to show that he has a grassroots movement behind him. I mean, that is really the difference between his campaign and everyone else's. As much as I like Elizabeth Warren, as much as I like... certain other candidates, even if you like other candidates, it is undeniable that there is a difference going on between when you put Bernie Sanders against all of them. Every other candidate is just running a campaign. The Bernie Sanders campaign also has a movement. And it's evident in how there are candidates who've been elected to office who run as part of his movement. I mean, the squad are literally, and this is not to take away from them because they've said it themselves as to why they've run for the offices they run for in Congress. The Bernie Sanders 2016 campaign changed the game in politics for progressives. It right. let the left know that there is an audience out there, there is a base hungering for this type of stuff, and they will come out in droves to vote for you. Just run and run a good campaign and stand up for the issues. And that's right. why you have people like AOC, Ilhan Omar, Presley, Rashida Tlaib. There's other candidates too that are just over my head, or I can't even think of them right now because it's past midnight over here, so I'm not thinking. But
wasn't AOC like a Bernie organizer? Like
yes.
that tells you right there, like yeah. she wouldn't be in this seat without him.
Oh, there,
like she wouldn't have even moved in that direction.
Right.
I don't think.
No, so... right. There are countless stories like that with people saying, you know, I worked for the Bernie campaign, you know, not for like the, you know, the local, like their state, volunteering for the state or whatever that they're in. And they say, I came out wanting to run for office, or I ended up getting active in the local, with local activist groups and nonprofits. It's, there is something going on here. And Bernie 2020 is clearly so far, we're not even in the thick of things yet. And so far it's already taken it to the next step.
Right. You can even like like, even in, like, the closing statements of the debates, everybody else had a sort of, like, shortened version of everything that they'd said during the debate. Warren has sort of been parroting the same. It's a very nice story, but it's her backstory. It's, you know, when I grew up, I wanted to be a school teacher, and that's fine. But Bernie immediately, like, he doesn't have to reiterate, like, the points that he makes in his debates. He went straight for, we're going to take on this industry, we're going to take on this industry. He was calling out, you know, not people, but he was calling out the industries by name and reminding people, as he did at the end of the first debate, that, like, you can say whatever you want about policy. It's not really going to mean jack shit if you don't follow it up with this agenda of at least heavy regulation. You know, I would hope that Comrade Bernie from the 80s would come back with, you know, we should nationalize the energy industry. Please, God. But, you know, he brings it back to this larger, like, focus on the class war. And I think that is the most important thing about him in politics in general.
Oh, I mean, he basically ended the last words of that debate, of the entire debate, not just from Bernie, because Bernie spoke the last words of the entire debate. He was basically saying that the people should just take down the billionaire class. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, it's just rhetoric you're not going to get from anybody else. And before I forget, I want to just go to something that really stuck with me tonight. And it was such a funny moment because it's a line that makes no sense. And I know I'm completely segueing here, but if I don't bring it up, I'm gonna kill myself. Because it was so funny to me. When Pete Buttigieg, when they asked him about the race issues going on in his town.
Yes.
When he said,
as my friend Lil Joshy calls him, the mayor of Ferguson, Indiana.
Right, right, right. He said, and I don't even know what this means. I mean, maybe Beto O'Rourke understood it because it seemed like a Beto line because it was so, so abstract yet so inappropriate. He goes, "The racial divide lives within me." I tweeted out at the time who said it, Marianne Williamson or Pete Buttigieg, because it sounded something like she would say. And if you heard it from her, it would just be like, oh, it's one of those bizarre things where she called, like, Trump a dark psychic something or whatever.
That was cool, though. When your whole, like, political life is spent around trying to copy Obama, you're going to fuck up and say something insane, like, the racial divide lives in me as a white person from Indiana.
My insides are redlined, like, what the fuck?
But I don't even, but it's, it doesn't mean, honestly, it doesn't even sound like woke, though. It literally sounds like, it sounds like he's saying the reason there's a racial divide is because that's what drives me. Yes. No, I am, like, I am the physical manifestation of racial division. Here I am, it lives within me.
He's kind of telling us the truth, you know.
To me, it registered very much as a, like a weird abstraction of, like, I don't see color. I care about everybody. But just spoken, like, said in the dumbest way possible.
It seemed like maybe he was trying to talk about, like, kind of the unconscious racism that, I guess, people say everyone has to a degree, but it got really flubbed.
Honestly, when he said it, I pictured, like an old school metal, like, album cover, and, like, the crazy dragon art with, like, the wings out. And I pictured him, like, there with, like, fire in his eyes, with the old, like, the Black Sabbath Iron Man voice, like, "The racial divide lives within me."
So, like,
kingdom of heaven within.
While we're talking shit about Mayor Pete, like, a special like a special shout out to him refusing to say Ilhan Omar's name.
Oh my.
Oh yeah.
I missed that.
Set her back chance, and he just, you could look at his face and see him consciously.
Don't say it.
I'm gonna get woke points for talking about it, but like,
I'm not gonna be called an anti-Semite for not hating her.
Right. Right. And then Beto, I think, too, like, refused to say. It was either Beto or Delaney.
I honestly cannot refuse to say his name. I cannot believe.
I'm really not sure who it was.
I cannot believe how much Beto and Mayor Pete bombed tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this.
I can't, because they suck.
But I'm not talking about. Listen, we all four of us know their policies. We could argue against the policy and what they would say. But for the showmanship of it all. They needed to.
Dude, he didn't even speak Spanish. What the
right, fuck? Right.
It's like his one thing.
Right.
Why didn't Pete like speak Portuguese to like micro target some?
But like the point of these debates are really to connect with people who are watching TV who are sort of divorced from the political process and just show them. I talk big. I'm a strong leader. Look at me. I can do this and that. It's not so much to really argue the policy minutiae, but they didn't do anything. Like, John Delaney and Steve Bullock had a better showing than the two of them.
So, I'll give Mayor Pete one props for one moment, which was toward the start of the debate, when he trashed the idea that Democrats should be scared of anything Republicans. Mm-hmm. And he specifically said that, like, yeah, if we do far left policies, you're going to call us socialist. But if we do like Republican policies, they're also going to call us socialist.
Right.
So we should do the right thing.
Right.
I mean, it was a good line. Never mind the fact that like, he's proposing we do Republican policies.
Right.
I'll ignore that. It was a good-ass line.
No, thanks.
It's so odd to me.
He said it instead of Bernie.
Right. It's that's a great point that she made, because it's literally like, they're going to call us socialists whether we do Republican policies or far-left policies. I'm just...
So he's willing to go like one in
so,
to the left.
So here's my Republican Party, my Republican policy. I welcome them calling me a socialist. It's like...
I like it, actually.
What blows me away is him, you know, talking about how he would, you know, he mentioned that he would decriminalize, or didn't he say that he would decriminalize, like, people crossing the border?
Yeah.
And he's mentioned in the past that he sees Israel as, like, a model for border security.
Oh, boy.
And so, and he's, you know, one thing that I would give Beto, like, props for is that he's at least been willing to be, like, the slightest bit critical of Israel in the past. But Buttigieg is not. And it's very odd to see somebody like grandstanding about like how it's immoral to make it illegal to cross the border. And then, you know, I think it was probably like 2 months ago he was saying that we shouldn't like model border policy after a fascist ethnostate.
Well, I'm not sure where to take that. Like, I don't know if that discredits his domestic policy or the foreign policy. Either way, it's pretty dreadful.
It is weird to argue that. It's extremely weird to say, listen, I look at what's going on in Israel and I see what's happening with Palestine and I say to myself, it's not right. It's not right. And then you come here and go, but I look at our border and those people crossing, they're criminals. It's like, what? There's a disconnect there, and it obviously has to do with him where he lives, clearly, because where he lives, probably the Israel-Palestine issue can't be further from something that his constituents or his former constituents really care about, whereas the border issue where he lives is probably a much bigger issue, clearly.
So something that something that disturbed me during the immigration part of the debate was the framing of literally every question that Dana Bash asked. Mm-hmm. Especially when she went around the dais and was like, why don't you support locking up immigrants?
Dana Fash.
Locking up immigrants.
Yeah, Dana Fash.
Bernie, why do you want more immigrants in America? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Right.
Like, yeah.
Right.
Super disturbing to me. It was like Fash.
Didn't she say, like, wouldn't decriminalizing crossing the border just incentivize more people to cross the border?
She hasn't decentivized it. So.
That's exactly.
Immigrants, what the fuck?
Like these things, like, because we know that that's not what the push is. Like, if you think your life is threatened and untenable, like, you're gonna come anyway, even if, right, like, we do fash to you here.
Well, Bernie Sanders was the only one to point out what I wish he went a step further and said that, you know, what's going on in El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras is a direct, there's direct correlation between that and what we have done to those countries.
Yeah, he was.
He didn't go that far. He's done it before.
Like, he hinted at
He's
that.
Done it before.
There was so much. Dude, they kept cutting him off. Like, they kept, like, 2 seconds to answer a question. So,
but he's the only one who said that there's a reason people are coming here, and we need to look and we need to deal with that, because just trying to stop them from coming is not A, the humane thing to do, or B, no, it's not working, because people will risk their lives at the chance of survival than stay where they are knowing that they will die.
Well, nobody no matter where you live, like, no one wants to leave there. Like, there's a reason. And that's, like, at least Bernie pointed that out. Like, it,
right,
like, if someone, he said, I forget the exact quote, but he was like, if you're going to walk thousands of miles, there's a fucking reason for that.
Right.
It's not because, like,
George Soros money.
American welfare, which sucks shit.
I mean, I personally, like, sometimes I just wake up in the morning and I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna walk to Washington. I'm just going to walk there. And, you know, you're right. Like, there is... It's incredible to hear some of these people acting like they're, like, incentives to come here, when, like, the incentive to come here is that, like, you know, somebody's threatening to, like, rape and murder their kid, right, or them, or they've gotten, you know, they witnessed something that they weren't supposed to see.
But it's very cool that like, America will catch, like, I don't know.
I can,
like,
jump in a second.
Oh, go for it.
All right, so on that line, like, I liked how he was basically, I won't say he was the only one, but he was one of the few that weren't treating, like, these migrants as, like, a pathogen that the United States needs to deal with by, like, touching foreign policy. Like, he was grounding it into the real world. Like it isn't just this amorphous blob that's acting on the United States. Like, we definitely have a cause. Like, our foreign policy influences the domestic policy in countries in Latin America, which, you know, lead to them needing to leave their countries or their governments being destabilized. And, like, he's like the two halves of that he's, like, actually treating them empathetically, not treating them, like, in a very dehumanizing way. And he's understanding that, you know, we can be a little more adult about it, and that we're not just facing this problem that's come out of the ether. Like, we have a role in some manner or another in, like, people having to come here to begin with. Like, it's not just from nowhere.
Even Warren was, like, talking about, and I don't think that she was necessarily fear-mongering, but she was talking about the crisis on the border. And, you know, the only crisis is that people are being locked up and kept from their kids. That is the crisis. The crisis isn't immigration. You know, this is sort of like a liberal talking point, but this country was built by immigration, not torn apart by it. That's not how it works.
Right. No.
Crisis is people caring more about lines in a fucking desert than about actual human lives.
I mean, the crisis is like that we live in a country where it's a, where we think it's appropriate to, like, when people leave water, like, to have the Border Patrol or like, activists and militias, like, go pour it out.
Right. Like, so many candidates on that stage were like, well, we should treat immigrants with dignity and respect, but also we're a nation of laws.
Laws, if you know what I mean. And that's why I would have liked...
the empathetic aspects of your answer.
Yeah, we live in a nation of laws, they say, but that's why I would have liked to have had, and I like that he's running, actually, Julian Castro, because it's kind of his beat. It is like going out and like explaining, like, no, the law that we have and the specific way we enforce it is not like the lawful way to do things. It's not good.
Yeah, that's one situation where I think, like, a little bit of, it's not wonkery, but some of the stuff that tends to go over people's heads is when people get into, when people get into, like, the details of things like that, like how laws are supposed to work. But I think it's really good on, like, those little, like, one-lane issues to have somebody explain, like, it's sort of like Marianne with reparations, right? Like, it's good to have somebody actually explain, you know, there's a lot of mongering about around this subject, but it's all bullshit. And I think it's, you know, I would hope that Castro would present himself as more of like a one issue candidate, but
yeah, like, know. I kind of hope those figures fizzle out, but if they were to leave the campaign and the electorate better informed on those issues, would be very good.
Well, like, of all the
and
people...
And Paul, Bernie, and Warren, like, left on those mm-hmm. issues, too.
Give them cover to go more left.
Yeah. Yes. Like, of all the people that are kind of in that, like, 3% and lower tier, like, at least Julian Castro has a lane. Mm-hmm. Like, he has something important to talk about. Unlike, you know, Delaney and Hickenlooper, Delaney is, like, Bernie bad.
Yeah, I mean, the socialism is scary lane is really important, Bob. I don't think that we should diminish that. That's important.
What about the freedom Delaney to make money off of your healthcare crisis? Mm-hmm.
I love being able to choose which doctor is going to treat my cancer.
I really love
steal more of my money.
So, guys, what would you say you're looking most forward to on tomorrow's debate? Because we have to do this.
Joe Biden talking.
We have to watch another one of these tomorrow. I mean, I know you guys aren't coming on the show tomorrow to talk about it, but I'm sure you'll be watching it. And we don't have Bernie and Warren on the stage to give us what we really want. So we have to sit and listen to. Oh, it's gonna be a rough one tomorrow. It's gonna be a rough one tomorrow.
I think it'll be less attended or less viewed. Rather, like, I think Joe's the guy that's, like, the reason to watch it, but I think people that are in it for Joe are, like, not too plugged in, and they just, like, are, like, he's got it, like, I don't need to.
Meh.
I just, like, why would someone watch this unless you're, like, a politics nerd? I mean, so I'll be watching it, of course.
None of us.
Oh, of course.
Perish.
I'm watching it.
I guess the only thing that I would be interested in is to see Harris and Biden fight.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
I guess what I anticipate and hope to see is Biden talking more, getting lots of questions, because I remember last time he was very considerate of his time, very conveniently. Like, I don't want to break the rules, talk more than I need to. So, like, basically, I'm hoping to, like, see, like, his foot in his mouth and, like, say more, like, ridiculous.
Oh, no, the more he talks.
The worse he gets.
As far as the rest of it, I don't know.
What needs to happen, really, is because I'm already seeing this. People are already tweeting out stuff like, oh, when's Bernie Sanders going to drop out of this one? Hope he doesn't take it to the convention this time. But listen, the fact of the matter is that we actually may very well, with all these candidates, especially with four people really polling back and forth, almost, that seems to be what the case is now.
Yeah.
And it's only going to probably get closer. We may very well end up going to the convention. and not having a candidate. Right.
Right.
And what needs to happen for that to occur, or for anyone, whether it be Bernie, Warren, or even Kamala Harris, for any of them to be able to really end up being the nominee, Biden's got to get knocked down at least a few more points.
So my thoughts on that are that, and this has been my conspiracy since the campaign started, is that Bernie and Warren have a pact. They're going to share delegates and be on a joint ticket.
Right, that's the thing. That's the thing that's good. There's people
like tonight, they were vibing. There was some
comradeship. They hugged.
Like, I saw on Twitter, like, Bernie people and Warren people were tweeting about how well the other candidate was doing.
It's very like Bernie handshake emoji Liz right now.
Yes.
I like it.
But yeah. let me bring this up. It's not the same, obviously, because I never want to compare these two wonderful people to these two people I'm about to bring up. But the relationship is very reminiscent of the first 80% of the Republican primaries between Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. And it's not exactly the same, but from what you brought up, how there's some sort of pact, maybe, and how they made sure to not step on each other's toes, and they were very handshaky and everything. You know, this is what I think. If one of them clearly does not take off and they just bomb when we get to the primaries,
right,
they should drop, that person should end up dropping out.
I fully endorse that strategy.
Right, but if it's close, even if there's a clear winner, but it's still close, they both should stay in.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to work like the last time around. They're going to continue to need to win as many votes as possible so they have more delegates to hand the other when we get to the convention.
Right.
Right.
And where you know, and listen, I know for a fact that there's going to be one side particularly who isn't going to understand that very legitimate strategy and call on this person to drop out because they're afraid they're going to pull another 2016.
Yeah.
As stupid as it all sounds, but
to be fair, there are some Bernie Twitter people that probably will pull the same thing with, like, you know, they see for some reason they've decided that Warren is the enemy of the Bernie camp and not like literally all of the other garbage candidates that are trying to like turn themselves into carbon copies of, like, I understand the malice for Kamala. I don't like Kamala. I think that she's good, like, rhetorically, and that's it.
I will say that she's my legitimate. I don't like Kamala at all. She's not even like, it's not even like I'm going like, yeah, Bernie's my number one, and then Elizabeth Warren's my number two, and then Kamala's my number three. No, that's not it. However, you know, compared to most other people in the race, she does, like, listen, there's a lot of things I really don't like about her. The Kamala's a cop thing, or obviously, yes. Her work as attorney general, but again, you have to look at who is most amendable, and comparing her with Biden. Yes, get mad at her for co-opting Medicare for All and unveiling that terrible plan she did, but think about when it came. If push came to shove, who would end up getting closer to what you want? Would it be Kamala or Joe Biden?
Right, well, so she I think was one of the few people to like raise her hand as to the like abolish insurance weird question the last time.
Literally, but after the debate, she backtracked on that. So
I know, but I mean, there's at least some indications, like,
right,
and some of the other tacks she took during it seems like she sees there being more appeal in a lefter position. If that's at least a taste of what her presidency, or like how, what her influences are, or instincts politically, I think she would be a much better president than a lot of the other people like Shields share the stage with. Like,
right.
Probably
right.
most of them.
I think
and
that
just
the.
To give longer... her... Okay, sorry.
I'm sorry.
And to be someone that's influenceable from the left,
right.
like through pressure, organizing, and all that.
And okay. to just get back to what Kennedy said, I'm sorry. Kennedy brought up how you know she's seen online, you know, Bernie people who think Warren is the enemy, and I've definitely seen those type too. But there's also the passive aggressiveness of the Warren supporters, where it is something this is usually how the conversation goes. Warren supporter goes, I don't see why anyone would support Bernie Sanders when there's Elizabeth Warren. And the implication there, without saying it, is that you're not supporting Warren because you're a sexist, because there's nothing else that you would support Bernie over Warren for. And then that's what usually brings up the Bernie supporter going, this is the problem with Elizabeth Warren and why I support Bernie Sanders. And then both of them fall into the ridiculousness of going after each other.
Right. And I forget what I was going to say earlier. Never mind.
I'm sorry, Kennedy. You know what happened there? My sexism was showing. I did not want you to complete your thought. I was afraid that it would be too pro-Warren, and I immediately needed to shut you down.
I remember what I was going to say.
Well, that's nice. That's very nice, Kennedy. Gee, would you like to say something?
Oh, I don't have anything right now.
No, let Kennedy talk. Let Kennedy
kidding,
speak.
Okay.
Nevertheless, Kennedy persisted.
Just to give Kamala some, like, legitimate, genuine props, like, she was the first person to talk specifically about maternity rates in black women and how, death during birth, in the black community. And I think that was really, really important. She definitely is the person that got Bernie talking about that. And now that's like a huge part of his like rhetorical strategy. I haven't seen him put out anything. Obviously Medicare for All would address that concern.
Right. That's sort of the thing. Like, I get people, and I totally understand this. People want to hear these specific issues addressed because it speaks to them. But
right.
I have yet to come across something that Bernie Sanders hasn't brought up in some fashion since his last presidential campaign. And it's stunning to me that other campaigns have been able to successfully fool the media into acting like they're the first ones to bring this up. Yes, Kamala probably is the first one to come up with this and say we need to come up with a specific solution that deals with this. But I can swear to you, I heard this from Bernie in 2016, and there was a provision in his Medicare for All plan then that dealt with this. Like, that's what we constantly see, I feel like. I mean, we've seen this with pretty much everyone. And again, I get what you said. I totally understand the importance of directly speaking to this. But then, you know, let's go to Warren's plans for dealing with this, and it's to punish the hospitals that perform poorly.
That's ridiculous.
Right.
People have had the thought beaten into their heads over years and decades that universality is a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Universal programs are something to not only be like wary of, but fear. That like universality will harm you in some mysterious way. And you heard it on stage tonight, where the main attack from like your Delaney's and Bullocks and other like sentient rocks were that Medicare for All, by virtue of being universal, is going to take like granddad's healthcare away.
Right.
Going to take your shitty employer healthcare away that you hate paying, that is super expensive. But that, you know, it's going to take that away. And that's scary.
Right.
That's
right.
Something to be frightened of.
Wait, you bring up a point, and I've been thinking. Excuse me. Here I go again, coughing. But you bring up a point that reminds me. I've been thinking about this now for a while. And, you know, the when people say they like their healthcare plan, like, no one who actually has to deal with their healthcare company likes their healthcare.
They like having it.
Right. And right. I don't even think it is that. In this country, we have put this idea of having good benefits from your workplace as this golden, like, this golden ticket. Like, you know you've made it when you have good benefits. Right. Like, you would even forego a higher paying job somewhere else, obviously depending on how much higher they're paying you, but you would even forego a couple $1,000s extra to stay somewhere that provides you with good benefits. And people look at that as, I have good benefits, so my healthcare company is good. I like them. But that's really not the case, because listen, I can say I have good benefits, but I know that if anything happened to me, God forbid, I had cancer, I had some rare disease suddenly, and I passed out right here in a coughing fit while talking to you guys, there's a chance, a very good chance, I or my partner or someone else in my family would end up on the phone with my healthcare company arguing with them that they should cover whatever my ailment is. And that's just the truth of it. No matter how much you like your healthcare company, because you've been sold that you have good benefits, if all you have to do is literally be in the hospital, you just need to use your healthcare services for something beyond your yearly checkup, your general, you know, your general practitioner's checkup, or going in because you have the common cold or the flu every winter or flu season, right, or whatever. You need to go for something where you are sick, you have a disease, you need actual medical care at a hospital, or you need a medication that isn't over the, you know, that isn't like over the counter or something. You need something that's, you know, that there's some sort of, you know, ownership of by some sort of laboratory that's able to jack up the price to ridiculous fees. You need something like that, and then you will understand truly that you don't have good benefits. It's just something where I think enough people have not actually experienced what their healthcare company would do if they actually for real got sick.
Yeah, so, and this is one of the reasons I love that the Sanders campaign highlights a lot of individuals' narratives, because a lot of them involve like people who thought they had like the good insurance, and then it ends up that their insurance won't cover this and that, and their child dies for lack of care when they had like the good insurance. So, and like I don't know who made it, but I think someone made the point during the debate of healthcare loss being tied to jobs, in response to someone talking about like, oh, Medicare for all would take away people's healthcare. Like, people lose their healthcare all the time.
Who wants to
let's say you have the good insurance through your job, like, that you're basically locked into a job that might be shitty, or let's say that there's issues with your workplace, like maybe you're harassed, or there's some sort of dysfunctionality within the business. I think a lot of people may choose to continue to put themselves in that situation just because of the horror of losing their healthcare. Like, that's not actually a functional system or good. Yeah. And then someone later on during the debate was talking like their whole point was these unions fought for these contracts that involve healthcare. Like, well, that's not the best either.
Okay.
And that's not a pro union stance. That sucks.
I wanted to mention
it's actually
that.
Like
suck.
Like the way to me that seems is like the way they treat unions is not like a movement for solidarity, you know, and like increasing worker influence against like management, but rather that they see it as this, and I'm kind of making a separate point now, that they see it as just like this interest group that you need to woo, and basically all they care about is a carve out. Like they don't actually have like a coherent union vision. The people that disingenuously will like point to these plans that unions have helped get their members.
Well, like,
it's not actually exactly union bosses had to union fight so membership. Hard for basic benefits. Sorry.
So,
I didn't hear either of you.
So guys, I'm gonna let's get to this before it's too late, because I definitely sure. This is the last thing I think I want to bring up, because but I just don't want to miss this, and I this has been absolutely great. I'm so glad you guys could join me. Can you please right now, before I forget, plug where people can listen to your podcast?
I plugs are ready. I was gonna ask, sir, do you allow plugs?
cheat plug me up, baby.
Hold on. Okay, so this week on Bad Praxis, over the weekend we did a record, and I think we're pretty comfortable with how it turned out. Mm-hmm. So you can always badpraxis.com will take you to our SoundCloud page. I encourage, like, if you want to follow us, you can follow us there. It's you don't need to pay or become a patron at all. You'll get free episodes to your email. But this week, our latest episode, we defend the IDF. Hold on, we're talking about the Ilhan Defense Forces, not the IDF you may be thinking of.
You guys got me. You got me.
And basically, like, we defend her against some of the latest attacks. We take a look at her incredible QAnon believing challenger, and then
we
later
refer to as Danielle Brigoli.
Kennedy will explain that. and we also touch on PICRU and its aspects for kind of cultural exchange between places we live and Japan, and the how it interacts with the LGBT community in both places and allows an avenue for expression online and talking about people's gender and sexuality issues. And we also are proud to introduce some new podcast music that was very generously made for us by X Nelio, and we plug him on our description.
Yeah, we'll never get it right. I will just say
I cannot believe you got not this is not dissing you guys at all, but I've been doing this show for very long now, 2 years almost, and you guys were offered original music score before I was. Unbelievable! Unbelievable!
So this
it's
is
the MR chat clout.
All due to Kennedy's clout as a YouTube cop.
Unbelievable.
Only doing my duty, citizens.
Kennedy, I'm expecting you to do some work for me next and get my Mia. Now, before I forget, on this show, we stan people who pay me money. So I'm going to have to read these two super chats from my Jimmy Reefer cake, Renee.
Oh.
Renee.
So Renee paid me to read these two comments.
Oh, goodness.
The Marianne Sanders Warren Politburo.
Yes.
Politburo.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
Where's this other one? I think I just passed it. What happened to it? Oh, here we go. The second super chat, Joe, beware the Ides of March. And to that I say, I hope not, because March will be way too late if that's what Joe Biden needs to beware.
Beware the Ides of September, hopefully.
At the very least, February.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, this is what I want to bring up before I let you guys go. And again, patreon.com/MattBender. I welcome the support. I ask for $5 a month. You can give more. You can give less. You can give nothing if you don't want to. But if you do give, you get the members patron show as the bonus every week. But because I'm doing two shows today and tomorrow, There's simply no time for me to do a members show right now, but we'll see what happens later in the week. Maybe we'll fit something in. So that's patreon.com/MattBender. And let me read the Patreon subscribers, because I think I'm going to read someone's name here that, these are the people who support this program through Patreon and make this show possible. Abigail T, Adam Q, Alan B, Andrew H, Ari R, Benji, Bobby M, Brooke H, Champagne Kami. This name looks familiar. Chi. Now, Chi, is that you?
What?
Oh, no, that comrade. Is me.
Oops.
So,
is it?
So then, again, I'm glad I read it, because, again, full disclosure, Chi has been a Patreon subscriber for a while now, and there's nothing to do with me inviting his podcast on the show.
Quid pro quo.
Yet, at the same time, I will just say that if you guys would ever like to come back on this program, I would highly recommend Chi continue his Patreon. Okay. Right. Christine H, Colin R, Dakota R, Dan M, Dank Uger, Dave K, David Z, Dragon Slayer, Floaties, Fries K, Francis Z, FTW All Day, Greg D, Ian Curtis J, Jameson Test, Janelle A, Jasmine H, Jeff K, Jonathan B, Joseph R, Katie S, Katz, Kyle, Lisa D, Max W, User Me, Melissa M, Michael J, Michael M, Mr. Danks, Nicole A, Namde Net, Romina O, Ryan Left His Best, Scott R, Stephen S, Struggle Session, TM, Tamney G, Thaddeus A, Tina M, Tom G, Tom M, Will P, Wootopian, and Zarin. Now, guys, thank you for sticking around. Let's get to this final.
Pretty impressive list there.
Well, it's...
What I'm most proud of is you saying chi instead of chai.
Is that... That's the correct one, right? Right? Right?
Yes.
I'm
just roasting you because you got that wrong, like, at the beginning.
Because I actually... back in my punk rock high school and college days, I mean, I say it like I'm not a punk rocker anymore. That is untrue. But back in my band days, there was a New York City punk band called the Zombie Vandals that we were friendly with. And the singer of that band, his name was Chai. So that's why I call you Chai sometimes. So anyway, let's get to the final thing I want to bring up today. And that is Glenn Kessler of the Washington Post's Fact Checker column. Now this guy has been, you know, this isn't us being conspiratorial or being, thin-skinned or whatever. This guy has not been able to hide his anti-Bernie bias for years. Basically, there's been numerous occasions where Bernie Sanders has said something factual, and he looked at it and ended up agreeing that Bernie Sanders is correct, and he would come up with some sort of everything, every time would be different. I don't know, I'm trying to think of an example. Bernie Sanders says that 30 million people wouldn't have health care, and he goes, it's correct, 30 million people wouldn't have health care, but Bernie really should be saying it's 28.955 or something like that, because if you consider the 0.05 people who can get health care through this sort of specialty program, but they don't have it anyway, so he's technically correct. And then
in one of those cases, he fact-checked him for, like, underplaying it. I don't remember what it was, but so the number of...
Glenn Kessler piece was that Bernie said that, X amount of people had to work two jobs in order to be financially solvent. No. So the one I'm thinking of is Glenn Kessler said that X amount of Americans own more wealth than the bottom 50%.
Yeah.
And Kessler said, well, that's technically true, but the bottom 50% has no wealth.
Yeah, they own nothing.
It just makes sense. It doesn't work. And it's so glitchy.
They're actually dirt farmers, so wrong.
Yeah, like, they actually have nothing, which is good.
It's like, well, they don't have any wealth, so are they really people?
Oh my god.
Mm. That's really deep stuff. I love the Washington Post. It's good.
Right.
But one of the papers of record is just like, fact-checking is actually very ideological.
Well, if you'd like to know what Kessler said tonight, I just got to, as an aside, my body is not treating me well for this episode. I am coughing. I got the hiccups now. I'm just a mess. And the funniest thing is, I have been fighting a cold, but literally all day I have not coughed. And then I get on this program, and I can't help myself but cough. But anyway, you might be wondering what Kessler fact-checked tonight that has my feathers all ruffled. Here is the Glenn Kessler fact-check tonight on Twitter. Why do I always have to turn down the sound when Bernie answers?
Yeah. Amazing. Facts. Amazing. Bernie be yelling.
This is commentary from one of Washington Post's premier columnists, and not even just that, from their fact checker, the guy. Like like, this is what bothers me when like people talk about
the fact that Bernie's loud as shit.
The weird thing is, like, yeah, he like yells or whatever, but this is a debate, and but also, I don't even think I'm about to say what you think I'm going to say. Which what you think I'm going to say actually is another great point. It's a debate. People yell and get loud and get passionate. But what I'm saying is, like, no, it's like a professional production. It's a televised event. Everyone's levels were exactly the same, whether they were screaming or not. Like, right. What is this guy talking about? Like,
right. It's like mixed for TV.
Like, it's just pure, like, you want to fact check it. It's actually factually wrong from, like, a production standpoint. If you were to take, like, the feed of the entire audio from that event and look at the WAV file, you would literally see that their sound levels were all the same because it's like a televised event. If Bernie was actually yelling and louder than everyone else, he would have been peaking. He would have been able. The audio quality would have been bad. And you may think I'm sounding stupid for bringing this up but I've actually seen no one else bring this up to the fact that the fact checker of the Washington Post is trying to act like he literally actually had to turn down his volume on his TV set because of Bernie Sanders. It's actually factually wrong because it's impossible he would have had to have done that.
I thought it was pretty bad when Bernie pulled out a megaphone from the podium and screamed John Delaney's face. That was.
But you know what? I know you're saying that as a joke, but again, it's a professional televised production. They would have fixed his levels while he's on the like he's going like he's like I want the damn bill. It's like you'd hear that through the megaphone, right?
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. But it's just like, yeah, just go ahead.
I think that after Tim Ryan said, like, whoa, Bernie, you don't gotta yell, everyone was like, oh, hell yeah, we finally got something that we can say about Bernie that isn't substantive, that'll just give people something stupid to retweet and be angry at him for.
Yeah, and Bernie was racist against Midwesterners when he yelled at Tim Ryan.
Mm-hmm. I was personally offended as somebody from Ohio. I didn't feel very heard, Bernie.
He was rude.
All right, guys. It is on the West Coast. What am I saying? I'm not on the West Coast. On the East Coast, it is 1 a.m. We have had a wonderful discussion. I'm so glad you guys were able to join me for this post-debate show.
It's fantastic, man.
We had across YouTube and Periscope, we had like over 250 people watching live. There's going to be thousands more who listen to the podcast when I put this up in a few hours. Bedpraxis.com, Kennedy, Chi, and Bob, thank you so much for joining me. Everyone check out their podcast. Kennedy, I will see. Oh, and Chi, I will see you guys in your usual moderating duties in the YouTube live stream. Hopefully tomorrow, because on tomorrow's episode of Doomed, that's right, two Doomed episodes back to back.
We're so spoiled.
Mike,
it's a real treat this week.
Mike Figurado of the Humanist Report will be joining me once again to break down the second night of the debates with Joe Biden, with Kamala Harris, with Andrew Yang, Tulsi Gabbard, who else? I don't even know. Bill de Blasio.
Lurch.
Right. Yeah. Hopefully Kamala knocks down Joe Biden a few, and then everyone else knocks down Kamala a few. And so no one gets ahead, just Joe Biden loses. And
I don't want to see Yang get silenced this time.
Oh, I really do
want to see him get
silenced.
Let me
Yang is bad.
Let me just say this. And I know you guys don't believe this conspiracy, but we are going to see tomorrow, I think. He's going to try to assert himself some more.
Oh, God. I hope he tries to get a point in edgewise all the time.
But what I think is going to end up happening is we're going to end up seeing that, no, in fact, his mic was enough. The guy is actually just not very assertive. He is. Yes, exactly.
Oh, he's soft.
Yeah.
Oh, early. Real quick. Early, you asked about, like, what do we want to see? I want to see. I'm not a Tulsi fan. I'm very critical of her. But I want to see her actually live up to, like, what this campaign's supposedly about and, like, attack the front runners for being, like, war hawks. Like, if she's not, like, pounding into Biden for his record on war.
Well,
if he's not attacking her.
But she recently...
If she's not attacking him for his... record on foreign policy, it'll be like extremely disappointing. Like, what was the point of any of that?
But she actually recently put out a statement though, saying that Kamala Harris is unfit to be commander in chief for that reason.
No, because Tulsi has a right wing foreign policy. Mm-hmm. Not to go off on Tulsi.
Okay, yeah, we've got our Tulsi criticism.
Right.
Don't need to
I think you gotta leave me and Mike from the Humanist Report something for tomorrow, guys. I mean, come on.
I'm sorry. We're cutting into that.
No, it's all good. All right, everybody.
Stealing your content.
See you all tomorrow. Thank you so much, guys, once again. That's Patreon, bedpraxis.com to check out their podcast. For me, once again, that's patreon.com/Matt Binder. Support the show. And also, youtube.com/Matt Binder. Subscribe to the YouTube channel for free, obviously. Grow the YouTube channel. Help me become a famous leftist YouTuber.
Absolutely.
Because come on, guys. Look at Majority Port's got over 600,000 subs now. Come on, give me at least 10% of that. Come on, come on.
Can I get a cup of subscribe?
Yes.
Wait, I didn't even mean to say at least 10%. I'm asking for at least 1% of that. All right. See you all tomorrow, guys.
Thank you so much,
man. Oh, no problem. Bye. We should do it again for sure. See you all tomorrow on Doomed.